Hey, it's Brian. We are in some crazy times right now. No one predicted a sports shutdown or the education system being closed for business, but here we are, people. I literally have three kids home at right now who are staring at me as I do this, who should be in middle and elementary school. But you know what we're doing? We're trying to keep them on a learning schedule. They still have their math time. They still have their reading time. They still have, you know, getting outside and running around time. And you know what? You should put yourself through that kind of a situation as well. Give yourself some structure. Take the opportunity to keep learning. Now is a chance to update your resume, work on your network, make sure you're ready for video interviews and more. And one way you can do that is through our Work in Sports Academy courses. We are 100% online, which is an appropriate social distance. That got a laugh out of my daughter. And you'll learn incredible strategies, tactics, and techniques that will get you hired in sports once the world gets back to normal. Check out workinsports.com/academy for more details. All right, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning at workinsports.com, and this is the Work in Sports podcast. Quick note, we're airing 3 episodes a week now. One out of the 3 will be corona-free. That is today. Wednesdays will be our standard industry interviews with experts from the industry, and they will be a break from corona coverage. That is not to minimize the impact of the virus. It is not to downplay all who are affected. It is for 2 reasons. One, we can all still improve in ways that are not corona related, which is the purpose of our expert interviews. And 2, this interview was conducted before none of us could leave our houses. So I didn't ask any questions about coronavirus because we didn't know it was a thing. And if you were listening to this podcast, please isolate yourself. Don't be foolish. I remember a few decades I spent thinking I was completely invincible and can do anything no matter what anybody told me. And you know what? I may have been and you may be. But the difference this time around is that you may infect someone who isn't invincible. Don't be selfish. Stay home. Okay, so let's transition here. There's no easy way to do this, but we're going to do it anyway. We also often think of the sports industry in terms of leagues, games, and events. Makes sense in a lot of ways, since that's pretty much what everything feeds off of. But there are worlds of jobs and opportunities that don't necessarily involve the score of the big game. Mark Cuban wrote an article years ago about how sports management degrees were a complete waste and people shouldn't strive to work in sports. Instead, they should get a business degree and look for jobs in sales. His theory was essentially, with only 100-ish professional teams hiring about 200 staffers each, there are only 20,000 sports industry jobs, period, and yet we graduate 20,000 new sports management grads each year. Well, I couldn't take this sitting down, so I confronted the Shark Tank dude, explaining his math was rudimentary at best and his analysis quite superficial. This was about a decade ago, so you don't need to bring it up to him or anything like that. We've both moved on from the debate, and he still doesn't know who I am. But I won, of course, because I was looking at the complete picture, and he was just trying to be clickbaity and bombastic. Look at our job board. Jobs with NBC Sports, not a team. Red Bull, Blizzard, Kansas State, Arizona Sports Foundation, Discovery Communications, Twitch. None of these are teams. And yet they are all listed on the first page of our industry-leading sports job board right now. Yes, places are still hiring. The jobs in sports reach further than team. This isn't an argument for sports management degrees. Your degree is a personal decision. This is more of a discussion about how wide the sports industry cuts. The opportunities are out there in various ways. You have to be creative in finding them. Or you can just get a membership to our workinsports.com job board and we'll do the work for you. Nonetheless, today's guest, Lisa Woodward, is a perfect example. She started out her career with the then St. Louis Rams and for 8 years was a major part of their marketing team. But her job now as manager of sports sponsorships for Anheuser-Busch isn't with a team, but it is deeply connected to sports. She works with her team to find the right spots and negotiate the right deals to expose her brand to the right audience in the right way. These are the type of opportunities Mark Cuban didn't calculate in his theorem. Lisa works for Budweiser's sports sponsorship team, and she's incredibly good at it. But let's hear more from her about her role. Here's Lisa Woodward. Hi, Lisa. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for coming on. I've always wanted to have somebody with the agency and team experience, like, or the brand and team experience like you do. So it's really cool to get this conversation going. I think there are a lot of interesting subjects for us to dive into, but let's start out with this. Let's start out with your early times. University of Illinois, you interned with both the basketball and the football offices. So how did this early experience at a large university in those departments help kind of frame your desire to work in sports?
Yeah, you know, I think that really for me, it taught me that I could actually have a career in sports. You know, I think when I was at Illinois, I was getting a degree in marketing. I thought I was going to go into international business, maybe work overseas, but always had this passion for sports that were instilled for me at a really young age from my family, my dad. So when I had the opportunity to work for the football and basketball teams and really see how the teams operated behind the scenes, it just helped to show me that, you know, there could be a way to marry that passion for sports with my business background. So it led into my first position with the Rams. I was hired by someone who I worked with on the football side at Illinois. And it was kind of one of those things where, not that it was that long ago, but there wasn't the plethora of sport management degrees out there, careers, and it wasn't something that was as visible to students as it maybe is today, to be able to say, like, hey, there are a lot of opportunities in the sports world that you could come into if you're not playing sports. So I think that it really launched my career. I don't think I would be in sports if it wasn't for those opportunities that were afforded to me there.
I love that you bring that up, because that's actually one of the starting points for this podcast. Was we wanted to introduce opportunities to people, because there's a lot more sports management programs now than there was. I mean, I don't think they existed when I went to college, and it sounds like you were on the probably the front end of them starting to be developed. But just introducing, and for women especially, to introduce and say, hey, there are a lot of executive people out there, and this is their opportunity, and this is where you can go, and to have that kind of a vision for things. So let's talk about those, and I want to get into that. We'll get into that subject a little bit later. But when you're part of a big school athletic operation like Illinois, you're part of a huge business. Like, this is a huge business. What do you remember most, or learning most, from those early exposure moments, like just about the entire operation?
Well, I think for me, for the basketball team, I was working in the coach's office. So I was basically the assistant to the assistant to the assistant to the coaches. But, you know, from my standpoint, I think it was just really interacting with the coaches on a daily basis, seeing what they went through more on the operations side. And with that, just getting to kind of feel like you're a part of the team. It was really interesting to be involved in that world. And then on the football side, I was working game days. So that's where I got kind of the opposite of really being able to see the ins and outs of everything that went on in a day to make a game as seamless as possible. So I learned a lot about kind of the importance of being able to do whatever it is you need to do to make it happen. And what I mean by that is I had supervisors that kind of lived the goal of, I'm never going to ask you to do something I haven't done myself. So right. We were kind of all in it together. We were in the trenches. And, you know, I was lucky my sophomore year working for the basketball team, we went to the national championship. And so that was an incredible run. And to be a part of that was just such, I think that's kind of where I start to drink that Kool-Aid, right? Yeah. It was such an incredible rush of feeling like you're part of the team and getting to experience that all together.
Yeah, I remember on my, like, one of my first internships, Magic Johnson came in to our newsroom, and that was it for me. Okay. Like, as soon as that happened, and I grew up in Boston. I'm a Celtics fan, but seeing Magic Johnson and just being in that environment, being like, oh my gosh, I need this. I need this all the time. I sign me up. I'm going to work in sports for the rest of my life.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you get that bug and you just can't get rid of it. So you mentioned earlier, you were an intern with the St. Louis Rams, and then you became a full-time employee. And I'm telling you, the question I get the most often from everyone in our audience and everybody listening is, how do I turn an internship opportunity into a full-time job? So explain it to us. Explain it, what happened for you a little bit. Share what your approach was to the internship and how that kind of advanced into a full-time role.
Sure. So I started as an intern. It was right in the heart of training camp. And so I started kind of later than most interns start, at least in the NFL world. But I really just dove in leading into training camp and then the season. And so it was a short internship. It was basically a 6-month internship. So I joke with people when they ask how long I've been in St. Louis, but when I moved here, I thought it'd be for 6 months, and 13 years later, I'm still here. But yeah. For me, really, the approach was just always trying to be the first one in, the last one to leave, always be willing to take on whatever I could possibly take on. And then on top of that, trying to bring forth new ideas. And this is something that I would kind of impress on our interns as well, is especially when you're on the team side, it's such a small organization in relationship to other companies that I always try to encourage people to take a step back and look at, you know, what's been going on, what teams have been doing for a few years, and then bring forth new ideas to say, hey, I know you're trying to reach these, you know, young college kids. Have we ever thought about doing this? Or, hey, I saw another team did this. Have we ever thought about it? So I always try to kind of be at the forefront of bringing as many new ideas as possible. And then, you know, for me, it was kind of an intersection of hard work and luck, which I think is probably how most people's jobs in the sports industry happen. But, you know, I worked hard and really wanted that full-time position, but then there also happened to be a full-time position available as my internship was ending. So I was pretty upfront with my boss, had a great relationship with her on what I wanted, and then was also interviewing for other jobs at the time. So when push came to shove, I basically told her, hey, listen, I have this job offer from someone else. I would prefer to be here, but I can't turn it down if there's not going to be an opportunity. So it worked. And then was able to stay with the Rams for 8 years after that. So it was a really, like I said, it was luck and hard work kind of combined.
Yeah. Circling back to something you said earlier, I had a mentor once who told me, be open to all ideas, no matter where they come from, and that you might find, like, learn things from other industries or interns or some volunteer one weekend, and just be open to that. And so it's cool to hear that from the other side as well, that when you were an intern, that you took that to truth. You actually tried to present your ideas and tried to be vocal in there, and somebody open to it will really receive that well.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing with the Rams, which, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but you know, we're talking back in 2007. So at the time, NFL organizations were really pretty small. Not all of them, but a lot of them were. We didn't have a marketing department. We didn't have a ticketing department, which just seems crazy to say now.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's crazy.
I think because of that, it gave me the ability to really work with all of the different departments as an intern. Because I think I was technically like a business development intern or something. So, you know, these days I think that because there are such larger departments and organizations that if you come in as an intern in the ticketing department, if you want to be outside of ticketing, then try and interact with as many other people in the organization as possible. If you have the bandwidth, offer to help with some project they're working on, as long as it's not impacting your internship, obviously, but try to make those connections while you're an intern, because if you're an intern and then you leave the company, they're less likely to think of you a few years down the road versus right then.
I love that advice, because networking really does start right there, right in that business, right in that when your feet are in the door and your feet are on the ground inside the organization, that's your best opportunity to make a name for yourself and build your brand. I think that's really important to emphasize. So 8 years with the Rams and 4 promotions, nice work. You're obviously doing some things really well. All your roles were in marketing. So explain it to us. How did you discover this as your fit in the industry? Like you said, coming in a business background and having dreams of international business, you obviously had a lot of opportunities available to you in the sports world. Why did you land in marketing?
So for me, it was really using the first few years to try and figure out what I was passionate about. And, you know, again, I go back to the organization being so small, I think it helped in that regard because I was able to interact and work in all the different groups. But I spent my first 2 full-time years with the Rams on the sponsorship side. So it was actually more kind of in the sales world, although it was more activating sponsorships, not necessarily selling. But I did get to kind of dabble in the selling of sponsorships with our sales team. So as I was kind of getting ready for that next step, again, I had a great relationship with my boss. So she and I sat down and I more or less told her, hey, listen, I'm not scared to sell. I think I would be good on the sales side, but it's not what I'm passionate about. I'm really passionate about more what falls into the marketing space for us, right? So it's more of the reaching out to fans, trying to figure out what makes them tick. How do we get them to come to games? What are people passionate about? And I think because of that, you know, they were able to marry where I wanted to be with an opportunity in marketing. But it was really just kind of having that upfront conversation of, hey, I'll do whatever I need to do. I understand that you need to move around to get to where you want to be in the sports world, but I feel like my skill set and my passions are best suited for marketing as opposed to the sales or sponsorship side at that time.
That's really powerful to speak up and say what you like and say what you want, because nobody else can put you where you're supposed to be. Like, you have to be able to vocalize for yourself and be your own advocate and speak up and say, hey, I think my skills lean best this way, and not let somebody else make that decision for you. That's a pretty powerful moment, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was lucky to have supervisors and mentors internally that I trusted enough to be able to do that. But because of that relationship, I felt like I could have those types of conversations.
So marketing is a really broad term. There's tons and tons of components. There's so much that goes into it. There's brand, there's email, there's digital, there's sponsorships. There's so much to it. One of your titles is prior with the Rams was marketing manager. And it, to me, it's not very descriptive. It's like, okay, so let's dig in there. How would you characterize your role in marketing, and what's been some of your favorite parts of marketing, especially when you were with the Rams?
Sure. My time at the Rams, I kind of joke that at least at my last few years with the Rams, I was really overseeing our marketing department. And I kind of joked that it was the department where they threw anything that they didn't know where else it should go.
So, I like
that. So my main role and responsibilities, at least the last few years there, were really focused on the branding of kind of the Rams brand as a whole, as well as all of our advertising. So we worked with an agency as well as, you know, some media planners, but the placement of the advertising, the design of the advertising, and then also what we considered more or less platform marketing. So really it was the idea behind, let's build platforms and programs that are important to the Rams brand, and then work with our sponsorship team to bring on sponsors to support those. So some of what we did was our women's platform, with our you know, outreach to women, our kids platform, our sustainability platform, etc. But then within our department, we also had the mascot. We had skin development, which was, you know, tied to our advertising, but was more focused on the boots on the ground, street team, etc. And then we had youth football in marketing for a while, our merchandise, as well as our social and digital media. So
wow.
It's kind of a conglomeration of everything. And to your point, it was kind of all things marketing. But when I look at myself personally, I really think it was more focused on the branding and advertising piece of it.
Did you have a favorite part of it all?
You know, from the Rams days, I think my favorite—it's hard to top the feeling of kickoff of the home opener.
Oh yeah.
I know it's more kind of a broad answer, but just with everything that we worked on and it being so all-encompassing to the brand, I think when you reach that point, there was kind of that sense of relief of, okay, we're here, we're starting. But then there was also that hope, because unfortunately, I didn't have a lot of great seasons record-wise with the Rams, but there was still that sense of hope of, hey, you know, it's starting now, we're 0-0, like there's this buzz, there's this energy. So, you know, when I look back on my team days, that's really that feeling that I miss that you can't really replicate.
So after the Rams, you jumped to Anheuser-Busch, which is where you are now as the manager of sports sponsorships. Were there any eye-opening moments as you transitioned from the team side to the brand side?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a huge transition. I think that the biggest thing for me, since I had spent my whole career to date on the team side, was just going from this small team of, you know, 150 some employees to this massive company of, I think we have like 19,000 employees in the United States. So it went from being, you know, kind of my comfort zone of, hey, I'm the go-to person here at the Rams. If I don't know the answer, I know who to ask. I've been here long enough that I kind of know how things work, to being that new fish in a massive pond that an ocean, basically, to trying to figure out who do I need to talk to, how do things work on the corporate side that's maybe different from the more private team side, and just kind of the ins and outs of that. I think that was really the hardest part. And then for me, my role really encompasses all of our sports sponsorships. So I was comfortable in the NFL world. I knew all the, you know, different people at the different teams. I had those relationships. But then expanding to start working with MLB, NHL, NBA, et cetera, was a learning curve for me for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had a guest on the show once who is a executive recruiter for the sports industry. And he told me that the hardest roles to fill are people in sponsorship sales. And he has the hardest time finding those people. Why do you think that is? This is a world you're familiar with. Why do you think that's a hard role to fill?
That's a good question. I think it's one where there's a very special set of skills that you need to where you're comfortable on the sales side and you know kind of enough about the sports industry to come in and be respected and appreciated immediately. And then I think there's a lot of people that are moving roles that stay within the sports industry because I don't have to tell you this, but the industry is pretty small, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of crossover and people jumping teams and people going different places, but that's interesting. I never had really thought about that.
Yeah, it struck me too. And I thought that was interesting. And I hear that and I think, ooh, opportunity. Like if those are hard roles to fill, those are opportunities that people should be driving towards, you know? So I'm always looking for that skill set and trying to understand what it would take to be really special in that world. So with Anheuser-Busch, you have this incredibly powerful global brand, and I'm sure you can get your product anywhere you want. So for you, I'd imagine it has to be like deciding where you want to be, like really evaluating those positions that you could take. Is that the biggest challenge you face?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely tough because everybody wants to be everywhere, right? So depending on who you ask in the company, you could find an advocate for any potential sponsorship in the world.
Right.
So I think the biggest thing for us that we've been focusing on a lot, but really even the past few years, just because of the changes in the sponsorship landscape, is looking at, okay, what have we been doing? What are we currently doing? But what are all these new opportunities? And not even necessarily new opportunities, but where do our consumers want us to be? So, you know, I think the challenge is that when you think of sports sponsorship, you think of really the traditional big four leagues, all the teams within that, but you know, daily we're getting a proposal from either a new team or a new league or a new festival or a new concert, and our budget's not unlimited, right?
Right.
So it's trying to figure out, okay, are there places that we can pull from to try new things, or do we just stick with what we've always done? And so it's always a challenge both internally and then also externally when we're having tough conversations with teams on, hey, we need to reduce our spend for this reason or whatever it may be, because we then need that budget to go pick up a new property. So, yeah, it's definitely a tough and a huge focus for us. And then also just how do we get everybody on the same page internally to make those moves?
It seems like it would be so much fun, though. Like, seriously, like, there's a new league, there's a new festival, there's a new something going on, and you're trying to decide, go through the data and pour through the information and who the right people are and who's going to see it and, like, really evaluating whether it's worth your time and money. Some new, you know, whatever, lacrosse league pops up and you have to evaluate. I mean, it just seems like it would be a lot of fun. I mean, do you love this role? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is a blast. I mean, it's, like, I joke that I've had two dream jobs so far, right?
Yeah.
So between the Rams and AB, but it is fun with all these new things popping up because you really, you know, when a new league or a new team is coming onto the market, one of the first things they think about is we need a beer sponsor. So
right.
We generally are pretty early on in the conversations with these teams and leagues, which is really exciting. And I mean, I think you most relevant right now, you look at, we did a deal for Bud Light Seltzer with the XFL. And it's been a blast to be a part of because it's just something so different. And the teams are really embracing it. The players are really embracing it, the fans. And so it's been really cool to watch it come to life.
That's got to be an enjoyable part about it. You work on these deals for a long time. There's a lot of intricacies that go into it. There's all this negotiating and planning and activation. When it actually happens, like let's use the XFL for an example. When they actually have their opening day and you start to see all your work getting put into action, is there a moment where you sit back and like enjoy that? Or are you always focused on, I got to get to the next deal now. I got to go on to the next thing.
There's no shortage of deals going on at any given time, but yeah, I do try and sit back and sit and kind of enjoy watching things come to life. And I think my role specifically, because I am so entrenched in the negotiations of the deals, I can really see, okay, that branded space, that outfield wall sign, that activation, I really kind of helped bring that to life through these negotiations. So it is cool to be a part of, and then just the ability to, you know, go to all these different events and activations and just see our brands. And, you know, I can say it because I don't work on the brand teams for Budweiser or Bud Light, but I think it's hard to find any brand teams that are better at activating partnerships than we are.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, to be able to sit back, and when I was at CNN Sports Illustrated early in my career, when I first started doing shows, it was such an enormous point of joy and pride to sit back and say, 200,000 people just watched what I did, you know, or whatever it may be. So I would imagine for you and your team and all the people at Bud, you know, when you've put in the work that it's going to, you're going to see the benefits of that. And that has to be like just a great moment. Like I'm kind of geeked up hearing you talk about it. So I want to ask you a question about influencer marketing, because it's something we just hear all the time nowadays. It is the buzzword. And yet I look at this, and maybe I'm just been in the industry for too long, and I'm like, well, wait, brands have always been trying to leverage authentic connections between their product and relevant personalities. This is not really something new. I mean, I look at you, perfect example, you guys, Bud Light Seltzer Super Bowl commercials with Post Malone. It's like, yes, he is an influencer and this is a logical combination. Is influencer marketing really a new technique, or is this just a buzzword that's just out there right now?
You know, I think it's a mix of the two. I think that, to your point, brands have been doing this for a very long time. I think why it's such a buzzword now and why it is somewhat new is because now anybody can be an influencer.
Oh, yeah.
So through Instagram or Twitter or whatever social media, TikTok, et cetera.
Podcast.
Someone starts to get, podcast. There you go. Someone starts to get thousands and thousands of followers, then all of a sudden they start commanding, you know, dollars for sponsored posts. And it's not someone like Post Malone or a really famous musician or actor, or even athlete. It's just someone who, you know, posted something cool and it gained traction, and now all of a sudden they're an influencer. So I think it's a mix of, yes, people have been doing it forever, but there's this new wave of kind of everyday people becoming influencers, and something where, you know, we as a company look at both, right? So we have our partnerships with Post Malone, with A-Rod, with Dwayne Wade, and with other famous celebrities, Jimmy Fallon, et cetera. But we also, through some of our brands, are doing kind of more of the smaller influencer strategies where we're not necessarily trying to get the level of one of these mega celebrities. We're trying to get someone that has a million followers or is very active and wants to promote Michelob Ultra or whatever that may be. So yeah, I mean, it's always changing. It's definitely interesting to watch. And then I think with the leagues now starting to allow more interactions, at least on the alcohol side, with players, you're seeing more of the active players doing stuff with brands as well.
So, you know, sports podcasts or anything like that, you know, we can talk off air. We all know the sports industry is constantly changing and evolving. I mean, you and I were just both at the National Sports Forum conference, and everybody's just talking about change. It's something we are talking about, change with fan experience. We're talking about change with sponsorship deals and people driving more brands, driving more towards, you know, a positive experience and association. Specifically, though, in your time in the sports industry, what are some of the biggest changes you've witnessed, and what do you think are the most interesting things that have developed in the industry?
You know, I think when I first got into the sports industry, I feel like it was still back where you basically had the four leagues, People were working for teams, there were brands, agencies, but it hadn't boomed like it has today. So, I mean, I think there's been so many different changes between, you know, social media really came into play my first few years with the Rams, and that was a huge focus. It still is, but a huge focus of the leagues and teams. And do we allow teams to have Facebook pages? Do we allow teams to have Twitter pages? Can they have a personality on these Twitter pages, or do they have to stick to just talking about the team? I mean, that was 2007, 2008. And then from there, it's become, okay, YouTube. Do we let people do YouTube? And obviously, it's grown, so on and so forth. So I think that's been a huge change. But then really just the makeup of the industry as a whole. I mean, I think just going to the National Sports Forum, as you mentioned, seeing the people in the room, the people fresh out of college that are coming in with these brand new ideas and these new ways of looking at things. I think over the past few years, a really huge one has been kind of the focus on data and trying to wrap our arms around capturing fan data and what do we do with it and what do the teams do with it and where does it go. And, you know, I think that will continue to be something, especially with some of the laws coming in place. So, you know, the exciting thing about the sports industry is it changes daily. And I would say the same thing about the alcohol industry. So when you marry the two, it's something that you try to stay on top of, but I don't know that you ever fully are.
Yeah, for sure. My wife is in the marketing world for a large company, and sometimes I am amazed at the amount of data and depth they can, you know, scalpel into understanding their target market. So for you, do you like that side? Do you like that data side of really getting to dig in there and understand the numbers?
I do. Yeah. It's a big part of my job with kind of putting together these partnerships and building these, you know, ideal, contracts with the teams that we're working with. And so trying to pull that all together. But yeah, I mean, it's overwhelming. There's so much out there.
Yeah, it really is true. So you mentioned earlier that you have a lot of your role often deals with negotiation and that you're dealing with some really large, agreements and sponsorship deals and long-term deals or what have you. What are some of the keys? I think this is something where a lot of young people struggle, and they think of negotiation as something that other people do. And yet we're all kind of negotiating through every moment of our lives in certain ways. We're always trying to get ourselves in the best possible position or to make agreements with people or to, you know, negotiate for their own salary or whatever it may be. So in your experience, what do you really hold as the keys to successful negotiation?
You know, it's very simple, but I think it's being as prepared as possible. And I think that really works from anything from negotiating your salary or negotiating with your spouse or negotiating with a huge corporation. I think it's having and it goes back to the data piece as well. So it's having as much information as you possibly can in your back pocket to answer any response, answer any question, know kind of where you stand, but have that all planned. Because I think the biggest challenge is so many people go into a negotiation, whether or not they know they're negotiating, and they're already behind the curve because the other person knows more than they do. And so having that, you know, and it takes time, right? Like having the time to be able to sit down and truly have a grasp on what you're trying to accomplish and the end goal is the best place to start for that. But I joked with someone yesterday that he said, I don't really negotiate ever. I was like, yeah, I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I think you would be surprised by how much you are negotiating with other people, with companies, with whoever it may be.
Yeah.
I joke that my toddler is the best negotiator I've ever met because he just doesn't budge. So can we just learn from him?
Oh my God, I'm so outnumbered. Yeah, we have three kids and I never,
oh man.
I'm the fifth person in the house on the totem pole. I might be behind the dog. So it's literally like I haven't won an argument in 15 years, I don't think. So let's shift
just
gears.
Just have them teach negotiations.
I know, right? I need to learn some tips from them. Let's shift gears a little bit. We have many young women in our audience who are looking for positive, successful role models like you in the sports industry. We've had many, many female sports executives on this show, again, as a blueprint, as somebody out there saying, hey, I'm doing this. And it sends a signal out to all the women in the audience or anybody listening out there in the social media world. to see this person and say, that's possible. I can get there. I can see somebody that looks like me in this role, and that's powerful. As someone who has found success like you have, how much responsibility do you feel you bear to help young women find their way in the industry?
I think it's a lot of responsibility, and I definitely take it seriously. You know, I think I was lucky when I started with the Rams because there was one of the very few female VPs in the NFL at the time was with the Rams, and she was an incredible role model. And so for me coming in, you know, the industry has shifted so much, even just in those 12, 13 years, to where there are a lot more women in leadership roles. But for me coming into a team and seeing her, I think it was very helpful for me to be like, okay, I could actually grow here and, you know, advance my career. But the one thing that truly stuck out to me from kind of those first few years with her was that she had a note on her wall, or it was, you know, a plaque or whatever it was, and it said, anytime a door opens for you, it's your responsibility to bring two more people with you. And she really lived that by really promoting women, not just, you know, the true promotions with jobs, but really, you know, taking the women in our organization and making sure that we were invited to events, we were invited to sit at the table, we were really able to kind of be involved in those discussions where, not that the men weren't doing that, but they just weren't thinking about it. So that's always kind of stuck with me, and having that experience has really helped me to really show like, hey, listen, I can, not only should I be here, but I can bring other people with me, and I need to make sure that we're continuing to do that. And it's something I talked about somewhat recently, I think at the National Sports Forum, where you kind of mentioned the sponsorship sales group having the hardest time hiring people.
Yeah.
I think a big part of it is there's hardly any women that are selling sponsorships for professional teams. There are a few, and they're phenomenal, but I think that there's a big gap there where, you know, as they're looking for people, they should start to look in some of these other areas.
Yeah, that's very important. You know, one thing that's always kind of stuck with me is that it feels like over the last 5 years, the conversation has kind of come out from the back rooms. We're talking about it a lot more. We're talking about diversity and inclusion and improving the gender gap, especially in sports, which is great. It's great that we're having the conversation. But I haven't heard a lot of people with a tactical approach to what we're going to do. How are we going to do this? How are we going to improve the gender gap? What do you think? What should we be doing better as a sports industry to open up the tent to more women and diverse candidates and just include everybody in this world?
I wish I had the perfect answer to that.
It's a big question.
I mean, it's tough, right? Because it's easy to talk about, but then when push comes to shove, you know, you hear a lot, well, you have to go with the best candidate. You have to get, which I don't disagree with, but, you know, I think that you're seeing more and more programs where they're focusing on diversity of inclusion. And so the National Sports Forum is a great example. They have a business of diversity in sports and entertainment. They offer, I want to say, 31 scholarships each year for people that fall into that diversity definition to attend for free. And so just starting to bring more people along and build those skill sets and get them out there. But I don't know what the right answer is. You know, I think it's and talking about it enough to where it's top of mind for the people that are actually making the hiring decisions.
Yeah, it's true. It's a tough one. I've had this conversation with a lot of different people, and we all come back to the same thing. It's like, we want to make a difference. We want to help. We want to be better at this. We want to change hiring practices. And it's just it's a time thing of like, how, you know, it's always figuring out the how to actually execute on it, which is a problem everybody has. We always talk about this balance between ideas and execution, you know, being able to have both sets of your mind so you can not just be an idea person, you can also execute on a plan. It's the same thing here. We're all like sitting in this world of wanting to make a positive change for women and diverse candidates and whatever, and we're still getting to that point of execution, it feels like. We'll finish up with this.
I think though that when you look more long term, there have been a lot of strides. It's just not as far as maybe we hope it's gone, right?
Yeah.
So like I said, when I started 12 years ago, it looked very different, and there's been a lot of growth and, you know, more diverse hires, more women, more people coming onto the team and inside within sports, but there's still a long ways to go. So, you know, I don't think we need to discount that it's happening. It just, wish it could happen faster.
For sure. Yeah, it's so true. And some places and some areas, it is happening faster. At some companies I've worked for, you wouldn't even think twice about it. It's like there's an extreme diversity across the board. In other places, not so much. So it's probably happening in some pockets better than others as well. We'll finish up with this. Thank you so much for coming on and giving us so much of your time and sharing so much of your insight into the industry. But I just want to know if you had a final piece of advice for all the young people listening in our audience, some guiding thing that's kind of led you or some piece of advice that a mentor gave you at some point that stuck in your mind, what would it be?
You know, I think from my standpoint, it would be not to take it so seriously. You know, I think that's easy to say when you're already in a role and have been in sports for a long time, but I feel like a lot of people, whether they're in entry-level positions with teams or other ways working in sports, they get so focused on the day-to-day grind that they don't take a chance to step back and really truly appreciate it. And so I think just, you know, enjoy what you're doing. It's, for the most part, not life or death, right? You're working in sports. It's a dream job. So it's try to enjoy it. And I think that'll make you better at your job because you do have that appreciation for it.
I love that answer. That is a fantastic perspective moment that we all need to absorb and remember day in and day out. I might put that on a loop and play that for myself every morning.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Lisa. This is fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on the show. This is great. Our audience is going to really appreciate this.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you to Lisa Woodward for coming on the show. A couple of important notes to everyone listening. At Work in Sports, we realize many of you are affected by the loss of sports events, and we want to help. Coming soon, hopefully this week, we're going to make all part-time and gig-style jobs free to access on our site. So just come and look. You'll get free access to them, okay? If this isn't enough to help you right now, contact our customer service at 1-855-220-JOBS, J-O-B-S, and we'll see what we can do. I've also created an abridged version of our Work in Sports Academy courses called Academy Essentials, which we are going to make free to all users of our site, whether they have a free membership or a paid membership. All you have to do is register for, again, a free or paid membership and upload your resume. Once you do that, you'll have complete access to that Academy Essentials course. The coursework contains advice on getting the right type of experience for the sports marketplace, building your network, writing your resume and cover letter, interviewing for jobs and internships, and much more. We're making it free. Hopefully that will help all of you who just need to improve yourself during this break. That will be complete later this week as well. And we're also going to do, as I mentioned earlier, 3 podcasts a week, trying to give you as much timely advice as we can. So now is a great time to subscribe and keep up to date on all we are doing. Join our private Facebook group by searching for the Work in Sports podcast on Facebook. There's ongoing conversations in there about getting ahead in the industry and networking with your fellow professionals. It's a great group to be a part of. So everybody, we're trying to do our best to help out where we can, just like every business in America seems to be doing right now. Continue to do your part. Continue to have great and lively conversations and listen to all that we're trying to share. Take advantage of the time in the way that you can and get back to improving yourself.